Well, when Warren Buffett used to hold fort in Omaha, it was an annual pilgrimage for me to go to the cornerstone of capitalism, get a reboot, almost like a boot camp, as they talk about when you go to the army for the first time, learn and remember how things work. And I feel a little bit like that when I talk to Charles Savage, the chief executive of Easy Equities. You know that, that part of it is better known as running a group called Purple. He's the CEO there, co-founder of Easy Equities. Every 6 months, they come out with financial results. And today, we're going to pick up on the most recent of these. Yeah, I love chatting with you, Charles, because it reminds me that you can be a thoughtful optimist here in South Africa, a thoughtful patriot, which is what we at BizNews are. You are very much in that camp. And you have been sometimes, I suppose, felt a little bit lonely in that you are still believing in the story. And it does feel to me like the South African story is now starting to get some proper momentum. Your business is doing great, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But just how are you feeling about our place right now?
Alec, incredibly optimistic. I just can't believe that we are where we are, considering where we were just 18 months ago. And as you know, as stayers, we're all obviously optimists. But when I reflect on where we find ourselves today, and having listened to parts of the mini budget, and I really haven't unpacked it enough, but I'm overwhelmed with optimism and pride for what we could achieve in this country in the years ahead. So yeah, incredibly optimistic.
Well, I was at Parliament yesterday and listening to this very insightful report that came from the panel. They have a 1 hour press conference, which is before the actual mini budget is delivered. Well, they call it the MTBPS. I get into trouble when I call it mini budget, so I suppose we've got to get the terminology right. But one thing that was really important and stressed a number of times was from the Reserve Bank governor, he's just a bit part usually in that panel, but he was quite a central figure yesterday when he started unpacking the change in the inflation target from between 3 to 6%, which is where we are, to 3% at the moment. And he explained that we will become a low inflation geography. Now, in your business, and I think this is where the tacky hits the tar, if South Africa is a low inflation geography, in other words, if that 3% gets embedded into our whole psyche, our national psyche, how does that impact the value of what you guys offer to your clients, and indeed the whole asset, the underlying asset base in South Africa? And where I'm going to here is it such a big deal that we start becoming what Lesetja said, a low inflation geography?
Yeah, look, it's incredibly powerful if we achieve it. I mean, lower inflation targets means lower interest rates. Lower interest rates stimulate growth because obviously capital is cheap. And so investors get a double return. They get, they get to borrow at a lower rate, and asset prices are appreciating faster because their borrowings are lower. And so for investors, it's the best news they could hear. You know, I think all too often people will confuse high inflation with high return rates. It's not the truth. It's the other way around. You need a low cost of capital to build new businesses and new things to generate high returns. And so low inflation targeting for the investors in South Africa is the best news we've heard in a long time.
It's been a good year so far for South Africa Inc. If you were invested in SA shares, has this been reflected, or is this part of the reason why we see such very strong results coming out of your company?
Yeah, look, Easy Equities or any financial services business is built around, a strong macro environment. You know, we need markets to be up. We need lower inflation rates. We need economic growth. We need growth in salaries, etc. So all of the environment has been almost perfect for us. You know, it's South Africa has got the best return so far this year that it's had in over a decade. And I don't think I think we're a long way from closing out the year still in terms of returns, given what's transpired at the budget and what might happen tomorrow, in fact. And then you've had the US on fire. Tech stocks specifically have just been on fire for the last, since Trump came into power. Then you add on the fact that crypto is now mainstream. You know, that also happened this year, and interest rates are lower. And so for us, we've obviously had some really strong macro tailwinds that we're built for. That doesn't mean we do poorly when the macro is against us, but we do obviously do better when the macro environment is filling our sails. And certainly the last 12 months, we've had strong wins in our sales.
This is where the unthinkable happened. They just came here and took his car.
No. I sold it to them. What's this?
It's crime scene tape. Did they pay you at least?
Within 15 minutes, money was in my account.
Were you happy with the number they brought you?
I got almost the same price as what I paid for the car. Everything was easy. Everything was painless.
Well, there you have it, South Africa. With We Buy Cars, you won't come short. How tall are you really?
1.93.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
What might happen tomorrow?
The credit rating, SA credit rating outlook is, the consensus is that the credit rating will improve.
And why will that help investors?
That's a signal to investors that potentially we don't qualify for, our credit rating might be too low, and therefore their confidence to invest is not there. And so an increase in credit rating is a signal to the world that there's more stability and improvements in our economic outlook that brings capital off the sidelines. You know, it's like a stock being uprated by analysts, if you like, and it just attracts more capital at a lower cost as well. So, you know, big deal for South Africa.
If South Africa, the country, was a share, what would its share price have done in the past year?
Well, it is a share. It's the currency, right? I mean, the rand is the share price of the country, and look what it is. I mean, we look like we might go below 17 this year, and you know, when I last looked at it was the fastest improving emerging market currency against the dollar, and so we're top of the pile in emerging markets. We're the best performing country in emerging markets if you use our share price, I mean our currency as a share price, and you know, who would have said that 12 months ago? You know, we've been in the bottom ranks for so long now that we've forgotten what it likes to win. The Springboks have reminded us what it's like to win, and you know, finally in the financial services sector, and specifically through the currency, we're winning again, and it feels fabulous.
Charles, why is there so much negative? I won't say sentiment, because that's not true. Where I look. And I made the point in my podcast yesterday when I was driving into Cape Town at 5 a.m., the roads were busy. Now, that is one of those often missed obvious signals that this is not an economy that's stagnant. This is, things are happening. We might, the official numbers might say not so good, but actually things are happening below the surface if it's the informal economy and so on. But why is it that you still get at dinner parties people whining about, oh, South Africa's going to the dogs, and that you would find a negativity that should not be shared given the underlying developments here?
I think we prefer to write and talk about negative things. You know, from there, bad news always sells more headlines than good news. And so the rhetoric has been shifted or shaped around about bad news, you know. And I still think that is the case. But when I look at the news today, you know, when I say, you know, not clickbait media, but when you look at, you know, solid journalism, the news is improving radically. And so the next shift will be the dinner talk will also start to shift. And you know, you and I were chatting just before we came on, and just how positive we were. And you know, we're going to take that conversation into our social spaces and share it with our friends and family. And so it will go on. And then the momentum will suddenly shift. And then we're going to be sitting here perhaps next year saying, my word, look at the positive sentiment that has shifted. So I think, you know, the dialogue has been shifted by what sold headlines. Bad news has dominated. And so that's been the rhetoric. But it is shifting. And for me, what's the tangible evidence of it shifting is people are coming home. You know, friends of mine that have been away for decades are coming home. And that we sometimes, the rest of the world has a better perception of our reality than we have living here. And the fact that people are coming home is a very strong indicator that things are better than we think. It's much better from the outside than it is from the inside. And so the rhetoric will shift over the next year or two, I think.
I guess the problem also is that news is always made at the margin. And so you've got the guys who are directly affected by the really bad stuff that still is happening and will happen in every country. They're rushing to take advantage of the refugee status that Donald Trump has opportunistically perhaps offered. He's grabbing some of our good people. Anyway, it is what it is. But getting back to you guys, and really the purpose of this conversation was not to give a treatise on South Africa Inc., although it's always good to talk about that, but to have a look at what the latest progress report from the Purple Group, which is a 70% owner of Easy Equities. And that's why I like getting the progress report, because you're in touch with now more than 1 million active investors. So congrats on that. You've broken through the 1 million mark for the first time in active investors. Is that a big deal for you guys?
It's massive. I mean, it took us 10 years, or just over 10 years to get there. And it's all too easy to not celebrate these milestones. But 1 million customers is a big number in anybody's, rhetoric. And so, I'm very proud of what we've achieved. It's funny, when you get to 1 million, you're already focusing, the goals just get bigger and you're already focusing on the next milestone. And I guess, 2 million will be insignificant. So we've set our sights on 10. But the impact that we're seeing, that we've had, that our customers are having on their own financial lives in the last decade, if we compound that out to more South Africans over the next decades, then, fundamentally the dream we had 11 years ago, which was to fundamentally change the financial fabric of this country, is coming true. But we're still only in the first, just outside of our first decade. We're so young, so little, so small, but so much growth and opportunity ahead of us. But 1 million customers is a very significant milestone on the journey towards achieving all of our goals and ambitions.
So this is the first year that you've officially broken through 1 million active members, 1 million active people who are on your platform, who are transacting and hopefully investing and saving. Is that a big deal for you guys?
Yeah, it's a very significant milestone for us. I mean, 1 million customers in anybody's notebook is a lot of customers. When we set our ambitions, our real ambitions were to, democratize investing for all South Africans, but the road map to get to all South Africans, starts by onboarding at least 1 million of them. And when we look at what these 1 million customers are achieving in their own financial lives, and we compound that out to what the impact would be if we get to more South Africans, it's a very encouraging, starting point for us, and a significant milestone on a roadmap to getting to the rest of South Africa.
You've got some lovely terms that you use in your report to shareholders today, but one of them is a flywheel, obviously from Jim Collins, who popularized the term some time ago. Does it work? Does that flywheel work as well with the number of customers? In other words, 10 years to get to 1 million, does it mean another maybe 5 more years to get to 2 million and then 3 more years to get to 3 million and so on?
Yeah, Alec, it's if I use a data point that kind of highlights that flywheel effect and the power of compounding that flywheel effect, it took us 6 years to reach 1 billion in assets. In October, we onboarded just 50 million shy of 2 billion rand in 1 month. And so that's what a flywheel effect. Things that used to take you years, sometimes decades to achieve, start to happen in months and weeks and days. And so, what took us 6 years to achieve 6 years ago now takes us in a month to achieve. And so more customers, more partners, more assets means the flywheel spins faster. And so long as we retain what we've built, our customers, our partners, and our capability, then that flywheel just gets to spin faster and faster. And it's what drives the J-curve, if you like, in any startup, is ensuring that the momentum keeps feeding the system and that more momentum builds more momentum. And, these results are the first, the first demonstrable evidence of the flywheel in effect at scale in the business. We've seen the business grow rapidly in the last decade, but not at scale. It doesn't matter where you look on this income statement. The numbers are big. There's no small numbers anymore inside the Purple Group. And so we're seeing the real compounding effect of a flywheel operating at scale.
if you just break it down into the basics of a business, your profits were up, or your revenue rather, your revenue lines up 87 million rand, your cost lines up 35 million rand, and so 50 million was added to the bottom line. And that's something that everybody can understand. There was a little bit more than that from bits and pieces, but in essence, that's the core of the business. Grow your revenues faster than your costs, and any business will then have that crocodile effect. Are you in that place now? Is that kind of set in stone that going into the future, the crocodile's jaws will remain open in that way?
Yeah, you know, I said in my report, talk is cheap and money buys the whiskey. And I talked about this, and you and I, in fact, talk about this crocodile effect that was emerging in our income statement last year. But this year, the income statement walked the talk. I mean, we delivered more revenue, and more of that revenue hit the bottom line than hit the cost base. And so what we're evidencing is that the bigger we get, the more revenue flows from the top line to the bottom line. And so what your shareholders or investors need to understand, and I think it's critical to understand, is we're above the high water mark on our cost base. We're now running efficiently at scale. And so a disproportionate amount of money from the revenue line is going to continue to hit that profit line. And obviously, we need to stay disciplined in our execution and, you know, control the cost base. But over the last 11 years, it's the one thing that people can look to. That cost to serve has come down year on year, or been very stable year on year in a high inflation environment. And so discipline on that cost base has been one of our core strengths over the last decade.
And it's a hugely ambitious strategy or a target that you set yourselves to democratize investing in South Africa. And I guess 10 years ago, there would have been many naysayers. Today, not so much. So now you've brought another hugely ambitious target to be one of South Africa's top 40 companies. Again, 10 years ago, people would have laughed at you. Today, maybe not so much. So what kind of compounded growth do you need to actually get to that ambition within a reasonable period of time?
So the Purple Group's roughly 3 billion of value. And when you unpack the fact that Sanlam owns 30%, you can add another 1.5 billion. Let's round the numbers up. Let's just say that we're a 5 billion rand company for now. You know, the smallest cap in the top 40, 70 billion. And so we need to be, you know, 12 to 14 times our current size. And, you know, what's the best predictor of whether we can do that or not? Well, history is the best predictor of what you can achieve. And, you know, over the last 11 years, we took a 2 million rand startup. That was our investment, initial investment in Easy Equities. And we created a 5 billion rand outcome in 11 years. And so that's a lot more than 15x in terms of what we achieved in the last decade. And so I don't believe the top 40 ambitions are that ambitious. I think it's the rails that we are currently on. It's the track we've laid down. It's the flywheel that we've created will take us there. If we just continue to execute with responsibility, we'll get there. And so the top 40, as lofty as it sounds, and as unrealistic as it would have sounded if I'd said it 10 years ago, if we didn't say that today, then I think they should look for another CEO or another team to run this company, because fundamentally, that is our opportunity. And if you think about what we had to achieve with very little 11 years ago, we had no income statement, no balance sheet, no brand, no customers, no partners. And we achieved multiples of 15x. And then you look at what we've got today, 250 staff globally, you know, all around the world, servicing our customers 24 hours a day. We operate across the world's markets. We have partners, the financial giants of South Africa and Capitec and Discovery, Telkom as well. And we have 1 million customers. 150,000 of them are shareholders. And if I like to refer to them as warriors, they're out there selling the brand and converting customers. And so we've got, you know, 11 years ago, we had 5 people. And today we've got hundreds of thousands of them. And so, you know, it is our opportunity and our responsibility. And it should be nothing in our way in achieving that in the next decade.
How do you retain that ambition, that startup mentality?
I think it's interesting, Alec. I mean, you have ebbs and flows, but really the power comes from your customers. You know, when you sit at a restaurant or you go through or if you find yourself in ordinary places in South Africa and people come up to you and say, Charles, you've changed my life. Easy Equities has radically uplifted my life, my partner's life, my children's lives. And if you start to find that everywhere you go in South Africa, the inspiration is just, it's electric. It's extraordinary. It comes from our customers. It comes from the insights and the impact that we're having on their lives and their excitement for the future, their ambitions for the future that are even greater than ours. And so I get it from all of you. I get it from our community of investors, of shareholders that every day will reach out to say, Charles, you guys are changing lives. You're making a difference. Keep doing it. And I get out of bed very early to do the work that I love. And I guess the day I stop doing that, the stop loving it, stop getting out of bed early is the day then I need to retire. But for now, I'm absolutely in love with what we're doing. You know, I'm supporting the ambitions of our customers and, you know, so excited for what we can achieve in the next decade.
I get the vision, but internally, there has to be a temptation as you get scale, as you get bigger, to corporatize, bring in more people to check on other people. And of course, then the startup mentality comes under siege.
Yeah, look, the temptation is as you grow, obviously you corporatize. And in fact, internally, that temptation is strong. You know, the bigger you get, the more your shareholders and the board want to protect what you've built. And so the risk profile of the company shifts to being something that is retaining the magic rather than trying to create new magic in the business. But I think the key is to recognize how early we are and how far out and how big the opportunity is ahead of us. You know, when we look around, they're financial giants all around us. And if we want to be a financial giant for ourselves, then we have to behave like startup every single day. We have to retain the ability to dream big, think big, act fast, break things, fail fast, and move on. And that's my DNA. That's how I'm built. That's what I get out of bed to do. And so long as I'm CEO, we're going to retain that startup magic, that dream big, act boldly, and break things fast and move on. And so, yeah, I don't see that changing for a long time, not certainly until we hit our ambitions of being a top 40 company.
Do you ever get people saying to you, but you keep changing your mind? Can't you just stick to one thing?
You know, Alec, I love it. I love the question because it traditionally comes from people who never built anything. Because if you think about entrepreneurship, it's a 1 in 10 game. And so if you have 10 good ideas, one has got a good chance of scaling. That's kind of the maths. And so if I had a crystal ball in the future, I'd just back the one things I knew would work. But in order to succeed, you've got to keep trying. You've got to keep putting new things on the table for your customers and the hope that one of those scale. And if you look at our history, our 11 years, we've scaled three businesses. This income statement shows three businesses that are really scaled, that are making a contribution to the group: Easy Crypto, Easy Retire Rise, and Easy Equities. And we've built roughly 10 products. So our success rate is 30%. And so our responsibility is to make sure, let's go and build the next 10, and in the hope that we get better at executing. So maybe this time we get 4 right or 5 right. But the bottom line is, you as an entrepreneur, as a startup, you can't back one idea with, you know, one execution stream. You have to be constantly looking for new avenues for growth, new products, new services, in the hope that you get 2 or 3 right.
And how do you know, look at those three businesses, when did you actually know that, right, this one is coming through and this is where I need to be focusing more of my attention? Was there a moment, a watershed point?
Yeah, for us, it's kind of, you can feel it in your customer base very early on. So their affinity for the product, how they respond, how they consume that product. And if you start to see those emerging flywheel effects, so your first month, let's say you get 100 customers, the next month, it's 200 and 300. You see it very early on in very small numbers. And then you've got to reinforce those behaviors and extend the product to more customers. You know, in our business, the inflection point comes at about 100,000 customers. So, you know, you need to get a 10% conversion rate from the 1 million customers to create a really sustainable business. But the signs are there very early on. And I'll give you a good example of one that really has succeeded in the last 12 months is Easy ETFs. You know, there was a vision that's basically said that active ETFs are the future of asset management. And within 9 months, we got that business to go over 1 billion in assets. Now, we've never got anything to go over 1 billion in assets in 9 months, ever. And our customers are utilizing it and making it a part of their permanent portfolios. And so that, there's a great example. That's a business. That's a durable business. That's going to be something that disrupts the income statement in the years ahead. And the signals are there. Sure. In this year's income statement, it was slightly above break even. So it's small. But the signs are there. For a business to grow that fast, that quickly, those are the signs you look for. And then you make sure you support it and give it more runways and more resources for growth.
I guess the one big question for outsiders is you've got these really strong partners, as you mentioned, Capitec, Discovery, Satrix is one of those as well. And Satrix is in the ETF game. So at some point in time, do you not come into direct conflict with your partners? So how do you manage those tensions?
Yeah, so Satrix is in the passive space and not the active space. We've decided to choose our lane as the active space rather than passive. But the market opportunity is more significant than one player can fulfill. Competition always drives the best outcome for the customer, but also for businesses. Businesses compete, create better results if they're in competition. And so I don't think anyone should ever be terrified of competition. In fact, when I unpack Satrix and Discovery and Capitec, why do they partner us? It's because they're so confident in their own strategy that they're not scared of the competition. They want to partner it and learn from it. And so they don't sit there worrying about what I'm doing, and vice versa, I don't sit there worrying about what they're doing. We realize that we can win together in partnership as a team. And so that's why we do good business.
You used a couple of racing terms, extending our stride. And that's a horse that's really accelerating into the future. Talk is cheap, money buys the whiskey. That you'll hear at every single race course. Are you still involved with that in South Africa, the horse racing industry?
I am, Alec. I mean, I'm chairman of Four Racing, which owns, the Turfentine Racing in Gauteng and racing in the Eastern Cape. It's a hobby and a passion for me. It always will be. I still own a few horses and I always will. I'm as excited about the industry. I guess I'm more excited about the industry than I was a decade ago. It's found itself in wonderful hands with great stakeholders and shareholders. And I think the future of horse racing looks bright. So yeah, I'm still involved, but it's a side hobby and a passion that sits outside of my working life.
And the future of South Africa?
I just think we're at the start of our own flywheel effects. South Africa's had, if you like, 3 decades to work itself out, this post-apartheid era. And, that sounds like a long time, but it really isn't. It's not even a lifetime. And I think we've worked out what we've got right and more importantly, what we've got wrong. And, as a businessman, you learn more from your failure than you ever do from your success. And I think South Africa is now starting to reflect on its failure. And that is the best catalyst for future success. So I really think South Africa is in for decades of prosperity, so long as our political leaders stay attentive to the failures of our past and ensuring that we change, make right those wrongs and try different things. Because the only thing that worries me is that, insanity is doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. And to some extent, we've been insane for, the last decade. But I really am positive about the future of South Africa. And I think we're in for a multi-decade period of prosperity. And there are just so many macro factors in our favor. I mean, gold is one. There hasn't been a lot said. But, gold has an extraordinary run, its best run since the 70s. What does that mean for South Africa? Well, the share of the all share that was gold just a year ago was less than 8%. Today, it's closer to 20%. What that means is that we're going to get greater GDP from our gold. We're going to get greater tax. And the gold bulls are saying, we haven't stopped yet. I sat in a presentation, analyst presentation, which predicted gold to $10,000 and beyond because China are moving towards a gold standard. Well, a massive benefactor of higher gold prices is South Africa. We're still one of the top 3 producers in the world. And there are lots of other things that we could talk about that really just is more wind in the South African sails, built on a ship that has spent three decades working out what not to do, and hopefully has the direction now to capitalize on these very strong trade winds.
Yeah, it's very well put there. And you think about the mining sector. Indeed, we have more gold resources in the ground in South Africa than any other country in the world. But we've made a lot of mistakes in not bringing them to account or not making the environment correct to bring them to account. And our Peter Major keeps telling us this and keeps banging on. But at some point in time, the penny will and does drop. But getting back to Easy Equities, getting back to your company, to Purple Group, these bold ambitions on the one hand, and then the need to continue with disciplines on the other. How do you balance those two seemingly contradictory forces?
Alec, it's how you split your resources. You know, 80% of our team are focused on retaining what we have. You know, if you like, they're the support structure for the group. And that's where the discipline, resilience, security, stability sits. And interestingly, that's not where I sit. That's not my DNA. And then 20% of the team are dreamers and builders and entrepreneurs, and they need to be given the license to think with more, with less discipline and more creativity. And that's how I run the group, is to ensure that that balance is well managed and well resourced, so that the dreamers have got a place to dream and build new things and give us new rails for the future. But the disciplinarians or the team doctors and engineers have got the space and the resources to make sure that everything that should be in place is in place and continues to move at the pace that it has in the years before.
So how do you and the crazy ones, the dreamers, stay in your lane and not be tempted to maybe go and twist a few arms?
Yeah, Alec, it's such a... You can't. Like, I can't help myself but want to get involved in across the business. And I still have a high desire to participate in things like the technology strategy of the group. And so you need strong teams around you that pull you out and say, look, Charles, you're not welcome here anymore, or you're not needed is a better way of saying it. And so you have to surround yourself with people that are stronger than you, that are capable of standing up to you and changing your mind. And that over the last decade, I think, is our biggest strength, is that we've hired, we've retained, and we've grown an exceptionally capable team that are capable of running this business long after I'm gone, but more importantly, challenging my view, and most importantly, changing my mind and telling me, hey, Charles, you're no longer required here. Thanks for your input, but go and do the work you paid to do, which is to build new bridges, find new destinations for our products and services.
And those destinations include other countries. Now, you've been at it in the Philippines for a while now. You're also looking at Kenya as well. Given that South Africa is finding itself, in your words, does the appeal still exist, given that you've got a very exciting home base, or a more exciting home base than you had previously?
I said, I think last year, you know, we've won the Currie Cup. And at some point, if you really want to test yourself, you must go and play in the World Cup. And South Africans have become quite good at winning World Cups, or at least competing in the finals of World Cups. And so it is our time to go and play the World Cup. And, you know, we actually went live with Kenya yesterday. So I'm sure we've onboarded our first customer by now. And so it's taken us a long time to get there. Regulatory, hurdles always move slowly. But Kenya is our next step into Africa. And Africa is such a wonderful, extraordinary opportunity that will keep us busy for decades to come, you know, just one country at a time as we build this business, but starting with Kenya. And then the Philippines, which has been frustratingly slow. But, I can say with 100% confidence that we will at some point get access to 100 million customers through our partner there, GCash. The only uncertainty we have is how long that's going to take. Currently, where we find ourselves is we're in a regulatory sandbox. And we are currently, there are 19 regulators who are behaving as customers on our platform, testing our products and services. I'm flying to Manila on Sunday to go and meet them to get feedback on what they think, what we can change, what they like and dislike, etc. With the hope or intent that they will then allow us to go to 1,000 customers next. And so these gates will slowly be opened. And over the next 2 years, the regulator has committed to enabling us to servicing up to 2 million customers inside the sandbox. And then they'll write the legislation, enable us to get to 100 million. And both of these strategies of going to new countries are just laying down new rails for growth that when South Africa, when we've achieved all of our ambitions for South Africa, those growth channels are starting to emerge and support our income statement. But we've built something extraordinarily special, not because we say it is, but because of what other people say. And I'm not talking about just special in the South African context. Our tech stack, our capability, our products and services rival the best platforms in the world. And it'd be foolish of us not to go and take those services to other places. And our strategy is to take it to places where you need a little bit more mosquito repellent, where it's a little bit harder to operate, which means it's more difficult to get to do business. But that's why we go there, because the competition is, the forces are low. And so we won't find a Robin Hood in those spaces. And one day when Robin Hood looks up and looks for growth, we want them to see us. And then who knows what the future might hold for the two groups.
That's a very interesting approach. And it seems in many ways to parallel what Naspers did. Naspers stayed out of the way of the big Silicon Valley giants for a lot of its life. It doesn't matter anymore. It'll take them on. But back then, it looked for areas that Silicon Valley wasn't interested in. Did you pick up anything from them?
Yeah, I mean, Robinhood is obviously, we've been called the Robin Hood of Africa. Robinhood has $11 billion on balance sheet. That's their war chest for growth. I have 200 million rand. Let's not take a pistol to a machine gun fight. It's not our place to go and compete. That doesn't mean we can't build as well as they do and deliver products as well as they do. In fact, we can. And I hold my team accountable to that. I'm constantly reviewing us against someone like Robinhood, who's got thousands of staff and billions of cash. But fundamentally, why pick a fight with someone who's better armed than you? Go to places where there is no fight and build your business in quiet places that need more resilience or more difficult to operate in and therefore have less competition. It's a smart choice and it's a good utilization of our resources. I mean, if somebody came to me and said, I want to go to America with this product or service, they're cool, just not with us. We don't have the capital, we don't have the armory, we don't have the balance sheet to go and wage a war with someone who's got $11 billion in cash.
And the Kenyans and the Filipinos, how different are they as investors from what you've learned so far to South Africans?
Alec, when I was 3 decades ago, people told me that South Africa was different, that we were different. What I've learned in 3 decades is they're no different. We all have the same goals, aspirations, wishes, and dreams. And interestingly, underpegging all of those is a good investment. If we want to achieve what we all want to achieve, then we have to invest in the best companies of the future, and we have to diversify and all those good things. And so we all have the same ambitions. And fundamentally, yes, our culture and our language is different, but those are small tweaks in the business model. The fundamental needs that we serve are global. If you walk down the streets in Nairobi or in Manila and you ask somebody, do you want to own shares in the companies you love? The answer every single time is yes. And so the runway for growth is insatiable for us. We can take this business to the world. We've just got to do it responsibly and durably so that we have the right to go to the world.
And what about if there were to be a crack on Wall Street, if the much discussed AI bubble were to burst, how would that impact your business?
Look, a bubble is an opportunity to buy. And we saw a mini bubble burst when Trump came to power. 20% down in 2 weeks is pretty accelerated. It's pretty much, feels that's what a bubble would feel like. What was our customer response? Is they bought more stocks than they'd bought for over 3 years in a single month. And they benefited the return. So our customers are smart and savvy. They'll sit on the sidelines and watch the bubble burst, and then they'll pick up the pieces of that bubble and invest more. So, in the short term, it's going to hurt. Markets going down always hurts. But in the long term, bubbles are the best opportunity to buy at the right price. And I don't think there's an AI bubble. It's hard not to, though. When you look around at the PE ratios, the capital that's being expended, you go, that has to be a bubble. And so I'm searching for what's different this time. And in every bubble, there's been a vacuum of something. In the case of 2008, the debt it was built on debt that wasn't worth anything. And what is AI built on? Well, AI is built on the income statements of financial giants. They're not raising debt to do this. They're doing it with their income streams. Secondly, the services that AI are delivering, you and I are using every day. Millions of people are using every single day. There's tangible evidence that AI is working. And yes, the price multiples feel inflated, but the pace at which these business models are accelerating are greater than we've ever seen. And so in my view, this isn't a bubble. There are pockets that look, you know, like a bubble. And sure, there will be capital that does that finds a home that shouldn't have. But fundamentally, as an investor, my job is pick the durable AI businesses. And if you find those Googles, Amazons, Microsofts, and Facebooks of the AI era, then now you should be accumulating them now. Because a decade from now, doesn't matter what the price is today and whether there's a whether they go down 20% tomorrow, I can guarantee you the price of these assets a decade from now is going to be unrecognizable to us. And so I don't think there is a bubble. I think this is a very durable, lasting technology, tectonic technology shift, the likes of which we've never seen before. And whilst that will fuel parts of the economy that feels like a bubble, this is a durable, lasting advantage built on real things.
And your business, the impact of AI on Easy Equities?
So, you know, some tangible numbers, 60% of our code is now written by AI. And we haven't got rid of any developers. So it just means we're 60% more efficient, which means we can build products faster, smarter, cheaper. We had our customers were served by 140,000 customers were served in the last 12 months by an AI agent. You know, that's taken a lot of weight or load off our own customers. Internally, we ran a competition to see what savings could we make. And in total, we generated 10 million rand of savings using AI to do things that we used outsourced suppliers to do in the past. And so there's some little impact points, but it's our first year as a business of using AI. For our customers, we've launched AI baskets, which I can't remember the exact number, but I think we've created 80,000 AI baskets for our customers, which essentially is you have a conversation with an AI and it helps you construct a portfolio in places that you don't understand across the globe. And so AI, I think AI is going to become the operating system of investments, which fundamentally means as a business over the next decade, we have to be AI inside. It has to be Intel for us. And so we are spending heavily on resourcing our staff, educating them and understanding the landscape. And the hard part about it is how quickly it's shifting. What you learn today is almost gone tomorrow. But the future of investing is going to be one on an AI operating system. There's no doubt about that. And so AI is going to become a very big part of what we do. Today, maybe 5% of what we do. Next year, it'll be 10%, and so it will go. At some point, it'll be almost 50, 60% of what we do.
So what will your company look like in 10 years' time? You double your life, as it were, and look back then?
I think we'll be in the top 40, Alec. I think we'll be a 70 billion rand company. I think that our staff count will be somewhere closer to where it is now than double the staff. And we've got 250 staff. So I think we'll be able to do this without doubling our staff base. And AI will be the accelerant in being able to get less staff to do more. I think we will be scaled in at least 3 countries. So we would have scaled the business outside of South Africa into 2 more destinations. So have at least 1 million customers in each of those. And I think our product stack, our income statement, will have 10 products that are producing at least 1 billion rand of revenue. That's what our ambitions are. And if we achieve that, then I guess, yeah, we would have achieved every opportunity that's in front of us today. And that feels tangible. That feels like it feels honest. It feels real. It feels like something we can do, should do, and must do.
So you've got 3 of those businesses already established. Are you going to keep doing what we spoke about earlier? Keep trying, keep having a go at new ones, keep looking for more of those explosive business streams that cause people to say to you, hey, Charles, can't you just, stick to one thing? Why do you have to keep changing your mind?
Yeah. Look, Alec, as long as I'm CEO, we're going to keep trying new things. It's just in my DNA. And I'll, again, give you kind of tangible. What are we going to do differently in the next 12 months? Well, in the next week, we're going to announce a partnership to launch a stablecoin in South Africa and partner with some some giants in the industry, which I'm really excited about. It, you know, stablecoin is the future of money. There's no question about it. And in the South African context, one or two stablecoins will win, which means they'll own 80% of the market opportunity between maybe two or three players. We want to be one of those players, and we've aligned in a partnership that we think has got the best chance of winning that race. And we'll announce that next week, and I'm excited about that. Then we're going to launch our advisor business in April next year, which is the first time that advisors can join our platform, bring their customers, but also service our customers on platform. So our customers can look after parts of their own financial well-being, but then outsource parts of it. And I believe that's going to be a very significant business as well. And so those are just two things that we're going to do that are completely new, that we don't do today, that we'll be doing. You can write it down, we'll be doing next year. And then I always reserve the right with my board and my team. 80% of what we do, we must plan to do. 20% of what we end up doing must come from the cards we're dealt. And a great example of that is stablecoin. If you'd said to me, Charles, have you got plans to launch a stablecoin this time last year? I would have said no. But given what's happened in the US and the massive adoption and regulation of stablecoins, that's a card that was dealt. And either you go, that's for me or not. And that card got dealt. And our response was, get involved. And so we'll, this market, this opportunity, this world is moving faster than, you know, any of us, I think, would like. But what that means is you've got to reserve 80% of what you're going to do and just play the cards you dealt. And we'll keep doing that with the same level, degree of energy and diligence and excitement that we always have.
Charles Savage is the CEO of the Purple Group, the owners of Easy Equities. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.